Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by the RunCatalina.com. That's the Catalina Eco Marathon, half marathon 10K, coming up Saturday, November 18th, our Tough Man Triathlon series. VeloFix.com, the coolest mobile bike shop around. ATVSwimSpas.com, official training vessels for six-time Ironman World Champion Dave Scott. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we have just sent out 2,448 grants, totaling $3.7 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out any of our interviews, Babbittville.com, iTunes, and as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, two-time Olympian from the U.S., and now a 70.3-aholic, Sarah True. Sarah, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm a little tired.
You think?
But I'm doing well, yep.
You know what's so funny? We were just chatting before we went on about, well, you're two-time Olympian, fourth at London, and then cramped up badly in Rio. After this last Olympic experience, were you ready to go, okay, four more years, ready to go for Tokyo?
No, you know, honestly, I was starting to look towards new challenges. When I looked at my race calendar for the year, I thought, you know, I want to put in one really great year in ITU.
Yeah.
And dabble in 70.3.
Dabble.
And, yeah, partway through the season, everything changed completely, and I decided that, you know, my ITU career is over. It's time to move on to the next chapter, and I am 100% now a non-draft athlete, which is definitely not what I if we were talking 2 months ago, 3 months ago, that's not what I would have predicted how it would have unfolded, but, you know, that's how these things go sometimes.
So, well, it was an epiphany. Basically, you got out of the pool and you were like, okay, it's time.
Yeah, absolutely. So I did Chattanooga 70.3 in May.
Right.
And it was fun. It was hard. I knew I wasn't, you know, specifically prepared for it, but I enjoyed it. And, you know, as much as you can enjoy a hard four-hour race.
Right.
You know, it just was, I realized it was a new challenge. You know, the atmosphere is just so different from the ITU racing.
Exactly. A little more you against the course rather than ITU racing. The best person doesn't always win, because when you add that draft element to it and you've got 20 people off the bike together, anything can happen.
Well, it's not even that. It's the atmosphere of the racing is really different. So, you know, when we do these ITU races where the pros are totally separate, you know,
right,
we have the however many women who are on the start line and the men, and that's all you see. That's who you engage with, which is great. You know, that has been my community for years now.
Right.
But what I really have enjoyed is, you know, with the half Ironman format, now everybody is in there together. You're riding the bus over to the swim start because it's a separate swim start. And I'm just thinking how cool it is that, you know, the pros and the amateurs were all in it together. It's a very different feel.
Yeah. And fun.
It's fun. It's something that I missed was that, you know, just that sense of being part of something bigger than yourself that, you know, we get really myopic, you know, so focused on the Olympics, so focused on high performance that it's really easy to lose sight of the fact that, you know, triathlon is a lot more than that. And I'm at the point in my career where for me, that was so refreshing.
Yes.
You know, just put it into perspective that I'm just another athlete among the many who show up in the morning. You know, we're all racking our bikes at 5 a.m. and bleary-eyed and waiting in the same line for the porta-potties.
Yes.
Yeah, so for me, it was really nice. You know, The racing aspect aside, obviously, it's so different. The training's different. You know, and all these things that I've taken for granted, you know, that was familiar. I'm plunged into a world that's a bit more unfamiliar, but yeah, it's a good change.
Well, and you've done, and back in 09, I think you did a couple of 70.3s, you did 70.3 Worlds. I mean, you've done the distance before, but now you're a two-time Olympian. Things are different. When you come into these races, is it, like you mentioned, the camaraderie? You're a very social person. And the fact that, God, there's, look at all these, so many more people to talk to than the same people I race with every week. I've talked to Gwen a lot. I've talked to Katie a lot. You know, yeah, all these people who share that same love of the sport as you do.
Yeah, no, it's cool. You know, I'm getting to know different people. I'm getting to connect with ITU athletes who've moved to, you know, the non-draft world. So, you know, basically we're coming full circle. Yeah, it's a different group of people. You know, there are people I've been huge fans of that I don't really know that well. You know, so getting to know Heather Jackson a little bit better, obviously,
yes.
You know, I've followed her career as a fan, but to actually get to know somebody a bit better, you know, Holly Lawrence, the same thing, where, you know, I've been following the results, you know, I'm a little bit in awe of them as non-draft athletes, and it's kind of cool for me to just, you know, be able to get to know them as
sure.
a competitor now. Yeah.
Now, so as somebody who's always been a really good cyclist, and to a certain degree, that's so tactical in the ITU races, is it fun to be able to use that skill that, you know, hey, listen, everybody rides a bike well. ITU races, you still have to ride the bike well, but it's a different, it's almost a criterium type format where people are accelerating and backing off and accelerating and backing off. The style of bike racing in the 70.3 races, you're enjoying that?
You know, I'm finding out that the biggest difference for me is the mental aspect.
Mm.
So in ITU, you know, I've learned to just be a very reactive racer.
Right.
So you see what other people are doing. You know, I'm not one to instigate a break or anything. It's just kind of, let's be as efficient as possible. Let's be smart and put myself in a good position for the run. But obviously for the non-draft stuff, it's totally different, where I'm starting to gain a little bit more confidence, but I'm trying to be less reactive. So, and I've been too conservative because I just don't quite have the confidence to, you know, just go really hard from the start of the bike. Because it's intimidating to
sure.
me.
Sure. 56 miles? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a long
well,
way.
I don't have to pay attention that long. And they have these races in these beautiful places. And I'm going to be looking around. I'm like, look at that cow that's over there, you know?
Rather than riding in circles, right? Because when you're ITU circuit, you're doing multiple laps.
Well, ITU circuit, you don't pay attention. You're going to crash. Whereas
right.
you know, on a TT bike, you have these long straights where it's just, you know, beautiful scenery. And for me, there's going to be some brain training involved, you know, trying to stay on the rivet for 90K.
Right.
You know, that's the biggest challenge that I'm going to have. Because it's not hard in the same way that IT racing is hard. It's more of a grind.
Yes.
You know, where it just kind of hurts instead of the,
yeah.
oh my goodness, my legs are going to fall off kind of hurt of ITU.
Right.
I'm learning that I can ride harder than I thought I could, but it takes a lot more attention and focus for me because I'm a bit more, you know, in Ups, the golden retriever,
yeah,
the you know, like the squirrel. You know, I have golden retriever brain because of ITU, and there's going to be some brain training.
So you need to have more of the Iditarod dog training, and basically
yeah.
just put my head down and go from here to Alaska and back, and not
exactly.
and just basically follow the guy in front of me.
Right.
I love that.
Retriever, more, you know, just focused husky.
Yes, husky. You are the husky. No, yeah, no more Labrador. So I look at, you go Chattanooga, then Mont Tremblant, and then Edinburgh, and basically, what, second, third at these races. And, you know, you're, again, a 10K ITU WCS person, and I see three half marathons in basically the span of about 90 days, and I'm going, somebody got to the buffet and was like, "Oh, I like this stuff. I'm going to keep coming back." When did you realize during that buffet that, you know what, I should have stopped maybe one course ago?
So normally, I've learned the hard way. It's pretty funny because after Edinburgh, which is the third of the races,
yes.
Stuart Hayes, it was Natalie who obviously went from ITU to non-draft. Looks at me and says, "Sarah, never do 270.3s in a row. Everybody knows that." Oh, jeez, now they tell me.
Yeah.
No, it's not something that I would ever recommend that somebody does unless they have a very specific purpose in mind. And for me, that was I realized that I wanted to try to qualify for Chattanooga. But
right.
The only way, because I left basically last possible minute, because it was, you know, the last spots were given for Chattanooga the day after Edinburgh. So I knew that I had to get points in those final two weekends. And, you know, you have to, it's less than ideal to race back-to-back. But I felt confident if I scored enough points in those two races, I'd be able to make it to Chattanooga. And, you know, fortunately, I was able to do that.
Love it.
But yeah, that's not something I'm going to do again because I'm going to plan a bit better next time. Let's be honest.
So the World Championships is on the Chattanooga course that you just raced.
It's a different course.
Is it a different course entirely?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, so we go up Lookout Mountain on the bike. The bike course is a little different for the race that was in May.
Okay, and is it more challenging? And do you feel it works for you?
I feel it is what it is, you know. That's,
right, you'll make it work for you.
Yeah, well, it's the dynamics are going to be totally different because we're going to have 50 women,
right.
Which is awesome, you know, but it's gonna feel like an ITU race. But I have to keep on reminding myself that it's still covering
56,
70.3.
Yeah. You've got a lot of racing. I love the idea of the women racing one day and the guys racing the next day. That's and you're sort of used to that because you guys usually don't race with the guys, right, in the ITU races.
Yeah, you know, there are certain things that I feel like both formats can learn from the other.
Yeah.
I think it's a really smart move on the part of WTC to separate those championship races.
I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, you shouldn't be compromised by age group guys, and a lot of times the age group guys can, you know, go pretty fast. And the other thing is, from a media perspective, it's very difficult to cover the women within the race when the guys are going off first.
Yeah.
You know, getting media in there. So I think it serves a lot of needs by having it as a separate entity. Plus, it's a showcase for the best women in the world, which the men should have their showcase and the women should have their showcase.
Yeah.
So I'm totally on board with that. So when you look back at everything, you know, two Olympics, and what do you look back at as your favorite day racing triathlon?
Oh, my. My favorite day racing triathlon.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
I know. That's why I came up with it.
I know. Wow, that's been the hard-hitting question here. I wasn't expecting that one.
See? Look at that. I mean, I look at, if I'm Sarah, I go, okay, I look at London. I was 10 seconds out of a bronze, so... But the crowds were gigantic. That was a really special day. But then there was other times where, you know, I think when you first started, a U.S. woman on the podium was a big deal.
Yeah,
and then in the last couple of years, you guys, between you and Katie and Gwen, there's been times where you guys have taken the podium.
I would say, you're right. I think probably my favorite was my very first WTS podium in Kitzbühel.
Uh-huh.
And it was also the first time an American had
been on the podium.
An American woman had been on the podium. So
yep.
That, you know, for it was a big breakthrough moment for me, but also, you know, I'm the vet.
Right.
But like I'm looking at these our program is so strong right now, and I'd like to think that, you know, I was one of the pioneers, maybe
no question.
You know, this current generation. Obviously, the really accomplished women ahead of me who paved the way for me. But you know, with the WTS format as it is now, you know, I take pride in knowing that I was, you know, I helped kind of lead the way a little bit, and you know, seeing all these women coming up now. So yeah, it's in part it was a breakthrough moment for me because I started to think of myself differently as an athlete, you know,
right.
As a podium contender, but then also, you know, now that a few years have passed since then, seeing how much depth and how strong our women are now.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
It is really amazing when you look
it's really cool to see.
Yeah, and when you
it's
look
really
at
cool
women coming in like Gwen with that swim run background and Katie from, you know, Steeple and with the swim as well. When you first saw you were firsthand seeing the strength of the U.S. women, when did you realize, you know what, we're not just going to be part of the pack here. We could be dominant.
Yeah, I have been just blown away by how successful our CRP program has been.
Yeah.
They've done a great job of identifying talent, and you know, success definitely breeds more success. So I think it was really helpful for Gwen to be the first, you know, successful product of CRP.
Yep.
Other women, you know, who are graduating college with a run background, then looked at her as, hey, wait a second, this is another potential avenue for me to go athletically. And, you know, they've just been, you know, cohesive group, really supporting each other, you know, realizing that they're fast-tracking to a high level. And, you know, they share information and stuff. And, you know, this is kind of what it's like. And it's really been cool to see from the outside, you know, how to take somebody who's totally raw and bring them up to world-class status within the course of a couple of years. I mean, I give so much credit to USA Triathlon for having that vision and supporting our athletes throughout the process.
I love it all. So your Olympic experience, your experiences. So you go to London and you're 10 seconds out of a bronze. I mean, you walk away going, I am the fourth best triathlete in the world. Nothing wrong with that, right? And you'd obviously been done well in the WCS series and all the rest of that. But at the same time, you're 10 seconds out of a bronze. How did you deal with that?
You know, I think every year that goes by, I will be prouder and prouder of that.
Good for you.
Yeah, I think anybody you talk to, whoever's in that position, the first feeling is just that how it's bittersweet, right?
Right.
So you're so proud to step it up on the day, but you were just a little bit short. So you start, you know, second guessing everything that you did leading up to that point. But you know, with time, you realize that it's more about everything you did right to put yourself in that position.
Yes.
And you know, for me, it was definitely a breakthrough because I realized that I needed to back myself a bit more. And, you know, psychologically, it was good for me in my development. You know, I was more consistently on the podium after that race.
Hmm.
So I think it was important for me. But yeah, you know, there's always going to be that what if aspect to finishing fourth at the Olympics. You know, I'm also in some pretty darn good company.
Yeah.
So I'll just be okay with that.
One of my favorite fourth place stories was this guy, Kenny Moore, finished fourth in the 72 Olympic marathon. And he was good friends with Steve Prefontaine. And, you know, Pre had taken fourth in the 5,000. And so after the run, after the marathon, Kenny says, I'm underneath the stadium there in Munich, and I'm not really sure how I should feel because, God, I'm fourth best in the world, but, God, I missed the medal. And Pre comes up to me, and he's like, Kenny, you were fourth best in the world. You should be so proud. Pre, how'd you do? Oh, I was fourth. Fourth sucks. It's like, but it's okay for you. You know, it's
exactly.
It's okay for you to get fourth. That's okay. But for me, my expectations were to win. So, but did that fire you up for getting back in 2016?
Yeah, absolutely. So for the next, basically, I got done with that experience, and I wanted two things. I wanted to not just make the Olympic team in 2016, but shape myself into a medal contender.
Right.
And then the second part of it was to be able to share that experience with my now husband, Ben.
Yes, Ben True, one of the best runners in the world.
Right. And, you know, he was there in 2012 as my boyfriend. And, you know, it was really heart-wrenching because he narrowly missed out on his Olympic team. And just, you know, for 4 years that was kind of this vision I had. And, you know, you realize how hard sport is.
Yes.
You know, we like to idealize things, and that's what kind of drives us, is the perfect performance, the perfect scenario. And then when you know, the unexpected happens, it can be crushing. And, you know, to be totally honest, last year was really hard on us. It was incredibly hard because it was twofold. You know, I had to deal with something totally unexpected on race day.
Yeah, you never cramped before, right?
No. And you go through 100 scenarios about how the race is going to unfold. That's never one that ever went through my mind.
Right.
And then, you know, also the second part was that, you know, my race was a major disappointment, but then Ben narrowly missed out on his Olympic team.
Yes.
And, you know, for us to have, it puts into perspective that sometimes things all fall into place and it's kind of magical, but most of the time you can be well trained, well prepared, and it's just not going to work out the way you dream. And that's just part of the process. It's part of sport. And it's, you know, something that we have moved on beyond, you know, moved
sure.
past, but it's still going to be part of us and, you know, how we move forward as athletes and people.
So how did you help Ben through his disappointment, and how did he help you?
He's tough. He's resilient. You know, it became the let's focus on next year. Let's
right.
focus on whatever the next block of racing is. It's just so our men's distance right now
on fire.
It's so strong.
Yeah, I know. It's like our women's try, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, you can't be a successful athlete at this level if you aren't pretty resilient.
Right. You have to be ready to.
Yeah.
The hard part is for Olympic athletes, you have to be on one day in 4 years. The odds on everything happening perfectly. I mean, it's one thing, you go to the Ironman World Championship, you have to be on one day once a year, which is still tough. But one day every 4 years, that's a toughie.
Yeah. And we're talking seconds.
Oh, you know, it's not, parts of seconds sometimes.
Yeah. Ben missed making an Olympic team by, you know, well under a second.
And that's
the
not that's
of a second.
when you miss a medal like you did by 10 seconds, you can go, I could have transitioned fast. Yeah, I mean, you could look at specific aspects. When you're talking under a second, it's not like you can look back and go, well, at that portion of the race, I should have. Oh, come on, a second, less than a second. Yeah, that's hard to even second guess yourself.
Right. Yeah. So it's, you know, we both had a pretty tough year, but I think we also, we've been in this long enough to have perspective to realize how insanely fortunate we are that, okay, it's a total bummer that, you know, we didn't have this dream Olympic scenario that we wanted, but we can put it into perspective. We're healthy.
Yes.
We've had amazing careers. You know, we continue to do to race well.
You travel the world. You meet amazing people.
Exactly. So just the fact that we're able to do this is incredible. And I'm not sure that, you know, if we were in our early 20s, we would be able to have the same perspective. So there's definitely a plus side to having some years under your belt as an athlete.
The nice thing about the sport of triathlon, and actually running is the same way, because you can step up in distance and, you know, eventually if Ben wants to, we can run, you know, 10 milers and halves and fulls and all that stuff, which is crazy. But, you know, for someone like yourself, when you look at the age of some of the folks who win at Ironman or 70.3, it's mid-30s. It's right where you're at. And so you're transitioning sort of at the right time, right? People are racing longer and going just as fast. So this, how has your body been handling this transition?
You know, it's only been just over a month.
Right. Yeah, that's true. It's a month. Oh, my God. Yes.
But I honestly, it is kind of incredible. You know, for a while, I was trying to fight. No. My body's totally the same. You know, I feel exactly. But on it, you know, like my toe just was always bothering me for the past 2 years.
Yeah.
And I switch over to just the past month. It stops bothering me. You start not trying to run at, you know, 5:20 per mile pace.
Yep.
You know, and all of a sudden, it's easier on your body.
Yes.
And recovery is a bit easier. You know, all these magical things that you go a bit longer, and your body can handle it a bit easier than trying to do the fast stuff.
Well, but the thing is, and we've seen it, where someone comes in with the raw speed that you have, and they step up to the longer distance and do well. But a lot of that is because of the intensity that you've always done. And people have a tendency to go, oh, you know what? I'm more of a 70.3 person. I'm going to just train longer and slower. And then all of a sudden they lose it. So it's, you know, I think what's helped to make you successful is really what you've done as an ITU athlete. Because you swim hard, you ride hard, and you run hard.
Yeah, you know, I've always responded well to high intensity, and you know, even if I move up to Ironman, I'm still going to have some intensity in there because,
right,
you know, just the physiological response to doing short hard stuff, it's far too beneficial to not include it in your training.
You got to, yeah.
Yeah, you have. Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny. Yeah. Paula Newby-Fraser, every year before Kona, would do a series of, you know, sprint races in September. And, you know, it's like, well, what are you doing? Why are you doing an hour event? And it's like, you know what? It's a race. And you've got to have that intensity. You can't just have long blocks of long, not slow, but long miles in there. You need to be able to go fast as well, especially at the level you're talking about. So is this year, I'm assuming, there will be no full Ironman races?
Not this year.
Good.
I know that I need to build up the volume and just get a lot smarter about some of these things. I mean, even you're going to laugh because you take this stuff for granted, but nutrition, I had no idea how many calories you're supposed to consume. So I got done with my first 70.3 in Chattanooga this year, and I looped back to my dietitian. I'm like, oh, you know, I took in like 350 calories. I'm feeling pretty good about that. And he just starts laughing. I mean, he was horrified because we had this nutrition plan that was more like 700 calories.
Yes.
And I didn't take anything on the run. You know, he was just absolutely gobsmacked that, you know, I was able to not blow up 100%, you know, halfway through the run. But then, you know, I actually took gels this past two weekends in Mont-Tremblant, and it's amazing how much better you feel.
So I bet you in those, did you ever eat anything in an ITU race? You probably had, what, a gel before the race or something?
During the bike for an Olympic distance race.
Yeah.
One gel.
One gel. There you go.
Actually, maple syrup packet, that's like,
yeah,
100 calories.
I remember, yeah. Chris McCormick showed up at Wildflower and he had like one bottle cage and like two gels, and it's a half Ironman. And
yeah,
he, you know, Greg Welch was like, are you going to put on another bottle? He says, you think I should? Yeah, I think. Have you ever heard of salt? You ever tried any of that? And he's like, no, what? Yeah, and McKeely Jones, her first fold out in Florida, I think she mixed her, like, whatever she was putting in her bottle, she like quadrupled it or something, and she had a big bloated belly throughout the whole marathon. Yeah, it's such a learning process.
But, oh yeah.
So these last couple, you actually took a couple of gels?
Yeah, I did. I took more calories, and it was incredible. And I wore socks. So that's something else that we take for granted, because you're not going to monkey around putting socks on.
No, not in a two-second transition, yeah.
No, Chattanooga, my feet were totally torn up.
Yeah.
I mean, I had massive blisters just chafing everywhere, all over my feet.
Yeah.
And then I wore socks these past two races. No blisters. It's incredible.
and really, was it take 3 seconds to put on a pair of socks? It's not like it's that big a deal.
Maybe a few more than three.
I
don't have the same amount of practice that you do putting on socks. I'm just going to be sitting on the couch, you know,
that is
repeatedly
so
putting them on, get my transition down.
But it's got to be sort of fun. This is like, oh, my God, socks. And, you know, you're sort of learning different stuff. Transition is different, but it's still – and you're not really at an Ironman or even a 7.3. You're not losing a race in transition. Where we've seen that happen so many times in ITU races.
Yeah, yeah. No, I could monkey around for a while in there. It isn't going to change the outcome.
No. What were some of the funny, in terms of ITU racing, WCS racing, in terms of mistakes that you might have made or mistakes that you saw with transition? And I mean, because people come in, they certainly could put their bike in the wrong spot. And you know.
Oh, yeah. No, this is a bad one. There was a race in Sydney a few years back.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously wetsuit swim because the water's pretty cold there.
Right.
I get out of the water, and I go to take my wetsuit off. I get all of it off except for one arm. And, you know, I think I was, like, second out of the water.
Yeah.
So, okay, don't worry about it. No stress. I cannot get off my arm for the life of me. And I'm pulling and pulling. Okay, first pack's gone. Second pack's gone. Third pack's gone. Finally, I just rip the thing off, rip the arm off my wetsuit. It stays on. I mean, I have the sleeve of my wetsuit still on my arm just so I can get onto the pack. But it was absolutely like a Hulk moment that I just ripped through the neoprene because at that point, I had no other option.
Right.
And one of the ITU staff, the former media person,
yeah.
I knew her pretty well. She's sitting there by my rack, just dying of laughing. That's not helpful.
That is so funny. Yeah, that's great, having somebody pointing and laughing while you're the only guy, only person in the transition area. That's pretty fun. So when you rode up by people and you've got your wetsuit arm on, did anybody notice?
Once I was on the bike, I was able to peel it off.
Okay.
But yeah,
that is funny. So do you see maybe next year going, okay, I'm going to do a full year. Let's see if I can get stay healthy. Do you see next year potentially is a Kona, not Kona, but just try to do a full?
Ironman, yeah, possibly. You know, it's all going to come down to whether I feel like I can get the bike up to speed, you know, paying attention for that long.
Yeah, it is isn't it funny, yeah. Yeah. Well, the nice thing is that when you're racing in Kona, there's, you know, it's not like there's just lava field out there, but there is just lava field out there. So focusing is.
That's
it's all about that.
Off season might be like a meditation retreat.
Yes.
In the bed or something.
Yes.
If I can manage 8 hours of meditation, I'm in for Kona.
I love it. So have you been to Kona to watch a thing?
Not yet. I've been trying to go for years, and I would love to.
What are you thinking? Are you coming over this year? It seems like Ben would like to run in the heat.
Oh, I don't know if I could drag him, you know, over that far with a whole bunch of crazy triathletes. Although he's really entertained by triathletes, to be honest.
Does he dig it? I bet he likes this better than the ITU stuff.
Yeah, except the coverage.
The coverage?
He has gotten spoiled by the ITU coverage.
Oh, God, yes.
You know,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
my God. It's controlled area, multiple loops. You can sit there with your bowl of cereal and watch the whole race. Yeah, it's that coverage is phenomenal.
I think the idea of being a spectator for a nine-hour race might be a bit more daunting.
That's funny.
I'll have to drag him to half first and see how he feels about that.
No, has he been to one of these halves yet?
Not yet.
No.
he's been off racing himself. So we kind of both were doing a bit of a point scramble the past couple weekends. He flew off to Europe to get points to get into the Diamond League final in Zurich at the end of August. And he was successful at that. And I was successful getting enough points to go to Chattanooga.
You guys are having a good year. Didn't he break the American record at Boston?
His own record.
His own record. But is that the 5K?
Yeah, the 5K on the road.
Nice. Well, breaking your own record is pretty good.
Yeah. It's not as gratifying, I would imagine, as breaking somebody else's record. But sure.
I like that. That's cool. So, yeah, it's funny. You come off an Olympics where you didn't have the race you wanted. You cramped for the first time. Ben doesn't make it. And then you roll into this. What's nice is every day's a new day, and every season's a new season. And, you know, look at you guys are both kicking butt.
Yeah. I think, you know, we both love what we do. For a little bit, I was falling out of love with ITU, but still love the sport. And, so years ago when I was interviewing coaches, one of the people I talked to was Matt Dixon.
Yes.
And he just asked me, Sarah, what gets you out of bed in the morning? Because we were discussing, I don't know, should I go for 2016? Should I switch to non-draft? This is back in 2013.
Right.
And it's like, Sarah, what gets you out of bed in the morning? You know what, Matt? ITU still gets me out of bed in the morning. The idea of ITU, and I've realized that for a little bit, that's not what got me out of bed in the morning. But now it's so refreshing to have this different world that I've entered where I'm excited about my sport in a different way. Like you said, we have this ability to kind of reinvent ourselves as athletes in the sport. Whether it's some people going to Xterra or going longer or whatever the case might be, it's a very privileged position for us to be in as athletes.
You know, the hard part about the ITU WCS format is, like you said, you're sort of isolated, right? You're coming to a city,
yeah.
You do a race, you leave. You're almost like pro golfers or pro tennis players, and you don't really get the hands-on with the age group athletes, the people who pay their way to do these events. Now you get to see that side, not just see that side, but immerse yourself in it and make friends who you will have for the rest of your life, who
yeah.
are in the, you know, all the different age groups, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I've been relying on friends, you know, professional and amateur, for advice.
Right.
And they're just laughing at me, like, Sarah, you've been a professional triathlete for years now. You should know this stuff. You know what? I don't.
You didn't have to.
I didn't have to. I didn't have to think about, you know, what kind of wheel am I supposed to ride? you know, it is really funny. That's a whole nother area of the sport where there are amateur athletes who know way, way more than I do. And I'm going to them for advice.
Of course.
They just think it's hilarious.
So when you... go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry, I was going to say, I'm humble enough to not have any airs about pretending that I know what I'm doing. Right
well, when you're doing a triathlon for the first time with a pair of socks and with a gel, you sort of are coming...
Flowing.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I watch those ITU WCS swims and you're on the podium, you're on the pontoon and people are diving in, they usually try to put a turn within 4 seconds of when you dive in, so you're beating the crap out of each other. Are these swims a little mellower for you?
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, it's kind of nice because, you know, I'm very intimidated by the fact that it's still double the amount of time that I'm used to racing.
Right.
So, yeah, just kind of a little bit more low-key. We're joking around at the start a bit more. You know, it helps that my swim's always been strong, so
right.
It wasn't an area of high anxiety for me. But there's absolutely a level of pressure ITU the first couple minutes of
yep.
the race that there isn't. You can have a bad start in a 70.3 and it's not going to make a difference.
No, it really isn't. And even if you come out 30 seconds back or whatever
right.
it happens to be,
oh,
you can bridge. Yeah, right. You can bridge, right? Because it's non-drafting. So you're going to
yeah.
catch the people who you're a better cyclist than. So have you changed the way you train for the bike? Because it's, you know, a lot of people with power meters and high end, you know, because like you said, it's your head's down and you have to focus on, you know, you're just on you, right? You're not
right.
reacting to the other folks that often.
Yeah, so it's kind of twofold. Like, again, I haven't been doing this that long.
1 month, come on, you're a veteran.
Yeah. Part of it was my bike fitness was not very good, I realized, this spring. And we've just had to bring it up in that respect. Regardless of the fact that I'm trying to do 70.3, which is a lot more sub-threshold power. But then also, so there's the physiological, like, just let's get my fitness back up globally on the bike,
right?
But then also trying to target more specific. I mean, I'm trying to dial in, all right, this is an appropriate power for this distance. And I kind of have a range, but I'm still figuring this stuff out. I'm not used to spending time on a TT bike, and that's pretty much all I'm riding now these days. So that's a big change. Getting comfortable in a time trial position, it feels very foreign.
Right.
But yeah, you know, part of it's mental, part of it's, the positioning, part of it's actually just getting stronger over that distance.
Well, and also getting off the bike after being in that TT position for 56 miles and running.
Yeah.
That's a different gig.
Yeah. in Chattanooga. I got off the bus. Oh, my goodness. My adductors are so tight. How am I possibly going to be able to run? And it loosens up. But I was a little freaked out.
That is funny. Hey, Sarah, I'm so excited for you with this whole new adventure, right? You got Chattanooga. And so will you do another 70.3 before Chattanooga, or are you going to focus on that?
You know what? This week, after doing two races in a row,
take time off.
It's been a mowing the lawn, doing chores, very exciting week, less training. I don't know. As you can tell based on my description of my race plan this year, I'm a little bit flying by the seat of my pants.
Good. Being fluid is nice. You've had such a structured, you knew a year out. Okay, the qualifier for Rio is in Rio. It's on this date. And, you know, everything was, the workouts were mapped out. The flights were worked. Everything was said at that time. It's sort of nice to be, you know what, if I feel like jumping in and being on a relay team or whatever, you can just make it fun and just do whatever the heck. You're sort of like that kid who just got out of college going, wait, I can do whatever I want?
Yeah, right. I can have cereal for dinner? Awesome. Yeah.
Yes. That is great. Oh, good for you, sir. Congrats on everything you've done. Please give my best to Ben. And
will do. Thank you.
You know, it's going to be fun to watch your journey here, because we've been able to watch it through, you know, making your first Olympic team, your second Olympic team, and having you in the sport. And the fact that, you know, with your personality, the age groupers haven't, for a lot of them, they haven't been exposed to that before. And I think it's a great thing for the sport as well, just as a two-time Olympian, as someone who loves the sport, making that transition, people can relate to that. Because to a certain degree, a lot of our athletes, when I have age group athletes, when we do a Q&A with an Olympic athlete, they sort of look a little cross-eyed at, wait, you swim and then you ride in a pack and then you run. We've never done that. It's sort of like it's a different sport for a lot of those folks.
Yeah.
Now you're on the same turf. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's something that's really important to me to have a grasp on. You know, if I decide to go into coaching after this, you know, I have to know it firsthand.
Yes.
I have to know what, you know, 95% of triathletes in this country are doing.
Right.
So it's important, and like you said, I love this sport so much. It's just being able to open up my love to different format is. I feel so grateful that I'm taking to this, because I know there are I2 athletes who transition over and they realize that they don't like it. They don't have a lot of aptitude for the non-draft stuff. Whatever the case might
be.
So I feel very, very fortunate that, you know, a month later, I feel pretty good about it.
You dig it.
Good about my decision.
Yep.
You know, I'm pretty fired up about it.
Good for you.
Optimistic, you know, so it's exciting. It's an exciting, but slightly unanticipated way that my journey's unfolded.
Sarah True has been our guest, a two-time Olympian, and now a 70.3 athlete after three of them in about 90 days. She is a 70.3-aholic doing the world championships, or actually be her second world championships, this time in Chattanooga coming up in September. We are brought to you by RunCatalina.com, Catalina Eco Marathon, Half Marathon, 10K. Coming up Saturday, November 18th, Tough Man Triathlon Series, VeloFix.com, the coolest mobile bike shop around, ATVSwimSpas.com, the official training vessel for six-time Ironman World Champion Dave Scott, our Challenged Athletes Foundation, that's DonateCAF.com. We just sent out 2,448 grants, totaling $3.7 million. Keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out any of our interviews on BabbittVille.com and on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here.